Welcome to Manager Tools. This week, the previous boss rule, part two. The questions this cast covers are, why do some directs resist change more than others? What can I do when directs resist changes? And how can I lead someone who is resistant? If you want answers to these questions and more, stick around.
Hey folks, if a cast is going to be about previous bosses, you don't want to be one of those previous bosses. Give people all kinds of bad ideas about what management is like. So, study, learn, become a better manager. And you can do so even before you become a manager by paying attention. You could buy our book, The Effective Manager. You can purchase a video course. You can attend an Effective Manager conference virtually. You can attend an Effective Manager conference in person in one of our public events. And perhaps your corporate organization is bringing us in to train people. There are tons of ways to learn, including just listening to the podcast and following our guidance. We want you to be a better manager.
Moving on to our next point in this cast, don't forget to take time to explain your changes, right? One of the ways that the previous boss rule takes hold is when other managers don't follow the guidance that we give in our podcast named Brief Before You Change.
Mm-hmm. And also introducing managerial change.
And introducing managerial change, yes. Suggesting that you never introduce a change to how you manage someone else without first introducing that change before you make it.
Can you imagine? We're saying this. I know that this happens because managers are really busy. They're not thinking through their behaviors. They're not thinking about what it looks like to their directs. They're doing what makes the most sense to them. There's no negative intent meant here. And can you imagine just one day deciding, oh, I'm going to do this differently and not saying anything to the people it impacts? Because it happens all the time.
All the time.
And I think part of it is we think, well, it really won't have that big of an effect on them. To some of our stuff, not specifically this stuff. Obviously, this will have an effect on them. However, I think that's kind of the assumption. Like, oh, it won't really affect them that much.
Right. It's just the way I'm changing the way I do things. This is just.
Yeah. Especially if you're, I think.
About me.
Remote. A lot of us have become, there's a lot more people who are remote now. And because you're at home, or maybe you're not at home. I'm at home, alone, in my office. It doesn't feel a lot like the things I do every day affect other people. Yeah. Now, to some extent, that's a little bit ridiculous given that what I'm doing right now is sitting in my office recording a podcast.
That's true.
And it can be really easy if you're remote to think, gosh, this just really won't change their day-to-day that much.
Right. It's like 30 minutes once a week. I mean,
no big deal.
Come on. No big deal.
The other danger here is if you don't tell them, they might think it's only happening to them. That's one of the things I've seen is one of the biggest dangers. So if you're listening and you're thinking like there's a myriad of reasons. And one of the things that I've seen is the most scary for them is, oh, is this only happening to me?
Absolutely. I mean, guys, just know when bosses start something new, most directs' first response is trying to figure out why, right? It's fear, uncertainty, and doubt. FUD. We all know that acronym.
Yeah.
Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And they start to figure out why is this only happening to me? Then they start calling all their coworkers. Hey, are you also getting these? And then they are too.
It's a guessing game.
Oh my gosh. Why do you think she's doing this? Well, I don't know. You know what this looks like, Kate? This is very reminiscent of that thing that I've heard of called micromanagement. And the fact that you feel as though you don't need to explain it to your directs, in fact, leads to what we're trying to avoid in the first place, that is even more resistance.
Yeah. And part of this is, y'all, that your role power causes them. And also, by the way, you can think of it this way as well. Think of the previous boss rule as simply meaning that your directs are more likely to assume negative intention in your behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We do that to all the people all the time, but especially to our manager.
100%. I believe that the majority of the time when people think about their boss's behavior, they are less likely than with others to assign positive intent. Mm-hmm. And it's just, again, y'all, this is just the previous boss rule says,
yeah,
I have seen so many things that tell me that this probably doesn't have positive intentions.
Yeah.
And okay, but then they start to play this guessing game because they don't know what you're doing. They play the guessing game, but they play it with this, coupled with this assumption of negative intent. And this leads to more resistance.
It leads to more resistance. Exactly. Guys, you aren't those other bosses. We already said it.
You aren't those people.
You're not those people. You're not them. The other bosses think that if they were to take the time and introduce the change, to socialize it, explain it, take questions on it, it just gives people more chance to talk it down and build up reasons to disagree and resist. But again, that's what the other bosses do. That kind of thinking is really dangerous. It's negative in that it presupposes that everyone on the team is going to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, following the analogy of the ore cart, the dissenters are going to be poison to your idea, or against your idea, I should say, with the potential supporters on the team, which diminishes the power of the supporters on the team, right? By just going directly into the change without taking the time to introduce it, what you're doing is making all of your directs a dissenter because they did not have the opportunity to say, yeah, this is a great idea. I love it. Let's do it. All the reasons you explain us doing it are good ones. Everyone is immediately a dissenter because you didn't give them the opportunity to be a supporter.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't know what's going on.
They're just completely unaware. They don't know.
Yeah. What we want to do instead is give potential supporters a chance. Mm-hmm. Show that you trust them to make good decisions about new ideas. Allow people who might be willing to be neutral until they have some experience with your ideas to think about it, to ask questions, to really have an understanding. Introduce your changes before you make them.
Yeah.
It shows confidence in your idea rather than fear of rejection.
Yeah, I'm not scared. I'm willing to show you what I'm thinking.
It, to me, one of the most important things about this is it helps your directs to be ready if it's ever their turn.
Uh-huh.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're listening because nobody ever taught you how to be a manager and how to do all these things, and you are not announcing and educating your directs about changes you make, you are doing your directs the same disservice that your previous boss did you. You're causing a situation where lack of understanding of the correct path is, quite frankly, propagated.
Yeah.
They won't know what to do when it's their turn. And they'll have to guess the same way you did. And I know some of us think, well, if I tell them how I'm supposed to do it and then I do it wrong, they'll know I did it wrong. Y'all, they already think you're doing stuff wrong. So another thing.
Oh, they know you're doing stuff
wrong.
Let
that go.
Yes, absolutely.
Also, think of it as we're all in this together. We're gonna, mm-hmm. Each of us has to change. Each of us has to try something new. And if we're going to ask our directs to be tolerant of our attempts to be more uh-huh. effective and professional, perhaps we should also give them the information that they need to be tolerant.
Yeah, that's absolutely it.
And listen, your idea doesn't have to be perfect. So many of us are worried that we'll come across as imperfect, that we'll come across as not knowing what to do.
They'll see my flaws.
Yeah.
I want them to think I don't have any.
Oh, that's so cute.
That's so cute.
They already have made up 10 flaws for you.
Your flaws are gravity.
In addition to the ones that you have, for real. Your idea doesn't have to be perfect for you to have confidence. Very mm-hmm. few managerial ideas are perfect, quite frankly. And if you're waiting for perfection, you will never find it. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You also put them in a position where they think they have to be perfect. They might believe they can never be a good manager because they might believe the standard is perfection. Although they don't believe you to be perfect. So it's a bit of a cyclical.
Apparently the organization forgave you for all of your flaws.
Exactly. But let's not propagate our problems, our flaws through just lack of communication. Let's not. I mean, that's laziness, quite frankly. Now, you can assign it to the fear quadrant.
Yes.
Overall, though, I would ascribe it to laziness.
Absolutely. I would agree. And the next step, though, I mean, is when we brief things, we need to be aware of the fact that what we're going to perceive in their responses to our ideas is resistance, so that we can forgive in advance.
We want them to forgive resistance. Us. Let's forgive them as well.
Exactly. Right. We said, now that you know the previous boss rule exists, be at peace with the previous boss rule.
Acceptance.
It is there, right? Acceptance. Now, in terms of talking to those people, let's not demonize our directs because they've learned the hard way to be protective and distrust managers. It exists, right?
Yeah, the boss rule
is
there.
Know it exists. Forgive them for the fact that it exists. Forgive them for the fact that they have these feelings, which we know because you are you and you're a manager tools manager. You will not visit these same ills upon them. They don't know that. So forgive them for the fact that they don't trust you. When they ask questions that sound or seem accusatory, which they might, probably will, don't attack the accusation. Answer their question. This happens all the time, Kate. In our conferences, I find.
Yes.
When people ask questions, and I got to tell you guys, far more often than not, when people ask a question in a conference that is, it sounds accusatory, it sounds like they're pushing back, they're really just asking a question. And the way they say it, the tone of their voice, their facial expression, the words that they use come across as an attack, but you answer them like, oh yeah, totally, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's just...
just the phrasing.
How they asked it. Yeah.
Exactly.
In the moment. It's just, the question sounded like that.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that when you're the person presenting an idea, such as this, managers, you are already on the defense, right? You go in with a degree of defensiveness, so you are even more likely to hear their question as one of attack.
Right. Here's an example. Okay. What if somebody says, I don't have time for these one-on-one things. Don't you know how busy we are? Ouch, right? Except here's an idea. Don't respond with some anger around how you do know how busy they are and you can't believe that you would say that. Rather, say, that's a fair question. I understand your concern. I know you're busy. All I'm asking for is 30 minutes a week, which is basically about 2% of your work week. And think about it from my perspective. You're each committing to 30 minutes a week, but I'm committing to 30 minutes a week times the number of all of you. And I'm busy too. The way I see it, it's a wise investment, even for me, with a much bigger time commitment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Doesn't that sound nice?
That sounds so nice.
There's an assumption of I think to Sarah's point a minute ago, you can, in these cases, when the questions sound combative, sometimes completely de-escalate what you see as the situation by assuming that their question is coming from a positive place, that it's just maybe not couched well, and thinking to yourself, I think their question really is X, and then answering that question.
Absolutely. If you're interested more in this technique, that is, it's called catching the medicine ball. We introduce the technique itself in our guidance, our podcast called Answering Questions in a Presentation. Don't demonize the resistance you're going to get. You're going to get it. Forgive it. Just get out ahead of that sucker. It's normal. They earned the opportunity to be defensive in this case. And change takes time.
Absolutely.
Change takes time.
Hey, folks, if you're listening to this cast right when it comes out, especially since it's part two, you may know that this week on Wednesday, we're launching a new product. And we're being a little bit coy about it because there's final technical testing to do and so on. But please tune in this Thursday to the Career Tools cast or next Monday on Manager Tools, and we'll give you a detailed rundown about the product, which is going to be better. And we're also going to make it cheaper because we like it when things happen like that. So don't mean to tease too much, but tune in soon because we'll have more.
Demonstrate patience, y'all. When you start something new, it will not go perfectly. No plan survives first contact with the enemy. Everybody has a plan until they get hit. Let's not overreact to disagreements or resistance. again, their resistance is smart from their perspective. It's earned.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're just being smart. I mean, they're just defending what should be defended, in their opinion.
Yeah.
And remember, or don't ever forget, guys, that any time you do something the first time, you'll be bad at it. Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to compare the way you do this thing compared to everything else you do, which you do pretty well. And when you do it the first time, it's going to feel awkward to not know how to handle these unusual situations, these questions that come up. You won't have faced some of these problems before. And it's easy for us to feel like because we don't know what to do, we're obviously doing it wrong. But you're not. You're just learning. Remember, always, that learning usually happens when you're uncomfortable. It's more comfortable to know and stay with the things that you know. But if you want to be a leader, you can't stick with just the things that you know. Doing things that are different and uncomfortable, that's growing.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone only did the things that they knew how to do, things would get real boring real fast.
Yeah. And the idea that when you're first starting doing something, you're going to be bad at it can be thought of another way. When you do anything for the first time, you will have massive amounts of room for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have a lot of reps for this. You can get better really quickly because proficiency comes from practice in a lot of cases. And just know that where you start means that there is all of this room for improvement ahead of you.
Absolutely.
And you can think of it this way. Humans are uniquely gifted compared to animals. Mm-hmm. Animals know how to do the things that they do, but they don't introduce new ideas and change things.
Right. They're not mixing it up.
Right. They're not out in front of the crowd, like changing things. In fact, naturalists tell us that animals are deep and narrow, while humans are shallow and broad. What that really means is that animals are really good at a very few things. Eating, sleeping, moving, procreating. That's all they know. And they're so good at it, they don't have to think about doing it because for the most part, animals don't think. There's no penguins in Antarctica building skyscrapers.
Right.
Much to Wendy's chagrin, she would immediately go there.
Immediately go to Antarctica. Because if you got a skyscraper, you got heat. So
well,
you can go. We can
for
all
the penguins, she would go, I think. Animals are narrow and deep, while humans are broad and shallow. We can do anything we put our minds to. Think of all the things we've created. All of the things. I mean, I'm sitting at a desk, and I, within arm's reach of me, are 15 things that humans willed into being.
Yeah.
Right? Things like, there's none of this at this desk, but there are things like fusion, art, calculus. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at a calculator that can do all kinds of things. There's a Sharpie here.
My computer.
Oh, well,
this microphone. My smartphone. All of the things.
I've just discovered recently that they have these new, like, plugs. It's an outlet, but it's not on the wall. Okay. And it has a battery in it. Because batteries have gotten so small that you can just buy these little pucks and you plug a lamp into them. Which means you don't, it is absolutely true.
I'm in love. I'm taking a note.
Amazon has this and it's like you could put a lamp anywhere and you don't have cords everywhere.
Can't.
Yeah. Yeah. They have wall sconces too, by the way, that stick to the wall and have lights on them and just like light up at a certain time or have remotes and they don't have cords. No drilling. Yo, we have made all kinds of crazy stuff and when we first do these things, we are incredibly shallow in our knowledge and capabilities.
Oh,
in fact, we're terrible at these things. Mm-hmm. Calculus being a great example. When we first start calculus.
Some of us never get better.
And to be frank, some of us don't really need to be any better, right?
That's true.
You're probably calculus is one of the areas where you probably started out shallow and stayed that way because, in fact, it's not necessary to get much better. However, in order to improve, we have to learn and we have to unlearn sometimes. We have to do it over and over again to gain any sense of mastery at specific tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Really any task, but also specific ones.
I use an analogy, an incredibly simple analogy for this idea. in conferences. So everybody that's listening to this podcast, everybody cross your arms. Mm. It's like cross your arms the way you cross your arms. Mm-hmm. And it feels good, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like the resting place for your arms. It's like, my arms are home. This is so comfy. And then uncross your arms and cross them the opposite way.
I bet some people are having trouble doing that. They have to recross them
the
right way.
Then, right?
Then look down and like re-wiggle. Right. It's like you're threading another needle.
Right. You're like, I don't even understand what's backwards. And now what we have is a group of people out there in the world who are looking as awkward as is humanly possible, many of which look like Aladdin. It's like, why do you think a human with their arms crossed would look that way? They don't look that way. It shouldn't look that hard. But that's us, right? That's people. You've never done it that way. Yeah. And because you've got a way that's comfortable, it's like the resting place for your arms. You keep doing it that way. And you could forever. And in this case, it wouldn't matter because it's crossing your arms. So who cares if you cross them backwards or not? But if you cross them backwards all of the time, you'd get better because you can.
This analogy also is really helpful in thinking about how other people view what you're doing. To some extent, the difference between crossing your arms one way and crossing them the other way, other people can't tell.
They can't tell.
And in this case, if you were to change your process a little bit, if it's your process, unless you announce, they can't tell and they don't know what's going on.
They don't know.
And we want them to know because mm-hmm. it's going to make them feel more comfortable.
Yeah,
it's going to help
absolutely.
Them learn.
Less resistance, all that.
We're also admitting to the truth, which is when we do anything new at work, we're going to suck at it. Mm-hmm. Getting used to being bad at new things should be part of your professional life. Just
absolutely.
Let it go.
Absolutely. Let
and
it go.
Y'all be patient, not only with your directs, but with yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? Be patient
Absolutely.
With yourself and then honor other people's attempts and work while they strive for their own mastery.
Absolutely. Now, one last thing, because again, we know that they're going to be resistant. Their chances are they will be resistant. I mean, it's like gravity. It could happen. So we would suggest you be insistent without insisting.
Sure. Yeah. We find often that when we tell managers to insist on things, we get some pushback.
Hint.
We get some pushback in the negative way. Mm-hmm. Insistence sometimes to others sounds like force or role power or dominance, but y'all, it isn't.
Exactly. The insistence we encourage you to have is not going around to people and saying, I insist. Because that'd be exactly, that's a little much. Rather, we encourage the insistence of sticking with your idea through the rocky beginning. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be perfect at the beginning. You're going to be crossing your arms backwards all over the place. It's going to be clumsy and difficult. And there's no need to force or threaten, which is what other managers do.
Yeah, that's right? them.
They don't forgive themselves. They fear. They get wrapped around the axle. Don't. Right? Instead, we encourage you to be insistent by having the discipline to stick with your ideas, even through the beginning of one-on-ones where it's clumsy and it's not perfect and it's not ideal and it does feel a little bit awkward and people are a little bit pushing back and resistant, and stick with it. Mm-hmm. That's the professional difference between being insistent without insisting.
Right. Professionals are insistent without insisting. And to some extent, y'all, this goes back to the kind of that forward motion thing I was describing. Y'all know that when you see forward motion and it's well, there's a lot of like a lot of energy behind it, mm-hmm. it's probably going to continue. So
yeah,
put your force of will behind this mm-hmm. one and do it because you know it's the right thing, because we've shared with you in the past in our podcast with Data About One-on-Ones and these other casts that support specifically this one that we've mentioned here. We've shared with y'all why this guidance works. We've shared with y'all why this path is the right one. So let's put our force of will behind it and cause that forward motion and maybe unstick some of that static friction we've seen.
Absolutely. I can't believe, Kate, that we got all the way through this podcast without mentioning my favorite podcast, Assume Positive Intent.
Well, yes, we didn't say we have a podcast called Assume Positive Intent, although we did talk a lot about assumptions.
Right, that's what I'm saying. How did we talk so much about assuming positive intent without talking about assume positive intent? If you haven't listened to that podcast yet, go listen to it. It is, in my opinion, the best podcast that we have. Do that.
Good. Yeah. We do recommend that one. It's really good. Y'all, almost all of your directs in your career will have had previous bosses. Mm-hmm. Those bosses were likely not as professional or as knowledgeable as you. Mm-hmm. Don't fault them for it. Choose your path. Build trust. Forgive them their well-earned resistance. Stay patient and insist through discipline. That's what you would want in a boss, right? You can be the boss that you dream of having.
Right? Don't be someone's Delta file.
Ooh. You get the Dark Mark Award for today.
Oh, that was a good one. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks so much, y'all. We'll be back next week with a new topic.
Bye, guys.